The State of the Union when it comes to health care, trade, and all the borrowing to pay the government's bills. I'm David Brancaccio. During the State of the Union address, President Trump emphasized what he sees as the restoration of America's place in the world, his trade deal with China, and the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years. He also talked about health care.
A good life for American families also requires the most affordable, innovative, and high-quality health care system on earth. Before I took office, health insurance premiums had more than doubled in just 5 years. I moved quickly to provide affordable alternatives. Our new plans are up to 60% less expensive and better.
He went on to say he's made a, quote, ironclad pledge to always protect patients with pre-existing conditions, a major concern among voters, according to opinion polls. Critics say the president has pushed legislation and regulation to erode or eliminate protections for people with existing medical issues. The administration also supports a lawsuit that declares as unconstitutional Obamacare, the law that forces insurers to cover pre-existing conditions. For more on the economic and health care policy implications of the State of the Union speech, let us consult economist Glenn Hubbard. He's dean at the Columbia Business School and chair of the President's Council of Economic Advisors under President George W. Bush. He told me today the president's optimism about the good times now was legitimate, although there are still economic worries.
There were two things I thought missing from the speech. One is an issue of what we're going to do fiscally going forward with the debt. That could be on the spending side or the tax side. The other is the socialism versus health care debate. The president mentioned the socialism word frequently. Health care remains an important issue. What are some market-oriented health care reforms the administration could talk about? The president, you know, wisely talked about all the things he has done in taxation and regulation, but I think health care and the deficit remain.
In other words, if you don't like what the Democratic opponents in the 2020 election are saying about health care, what is he proposing?
Right. There are a number of very successful, potentially successful market-oriented health care reform proposals, and I think it would help the president to articulate those. They'd be consistent with his other economic objectives and would go further than just using the S word of socialism.
How much more work do you think there is to be done on U.S.-China trade? President Trump didn't refer to the recent deal as a phase one. He said, we signed this groundbreaking agreement, quote, our strategy worked. I mean, it's not all taken care of.
No, but it is progress. I have to give President Trump credit for confronting China's bad trade practices. But the phase one agreement is a phase one agreement. There's still big issues with China, with intellectual property, and also the bigger strategic question of the United States versus China. So I do give the president some credit for progress, but there is much work to be done.
Glenn Hubbard is an economist and dean at the Columbia Business School. He's the former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors under George W. Bush. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
The president's headline case that these are now the good times has weight. However, this could be a risky strategy to pitch to people who have their own gauges of the economy. They have their own states of the union and may judge this in part on how their own household economy is doing. Felicia Wong is president and CEO of the liberal-leaning nonpartisan think tank, the Roosevelt Institute. Ms. Wong, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David.
So it is the lowest unemployment in 50 years. People on the left and right thought the trading system with China was broken, and there's a phase one deal now with China. Wasn't the president right to show off his achievements?
I think the real argument is how to understand what's going on under the hood of this economy. First of all, Trump inherited a recovery. That's important to remember. He didn't mess it up, which is good, but it also doesn't mean that he deserves any credit for some of the things that are happening out there that are, in fact, better for American workers. The question is whether the growth we see out there is either shared or lasting. And when you look under the hood, growth really isn't shared. Wages are barely rising, even though they are better at the bottom. Adjusted for inflation, wages for workers are up less than 1%, which is worse than under President Obama. And more importantly, wages are rising in part because we see minimum wage increases at the state level.
The president did refer to the fact that the lower half of incomes are improving, but you're saying, yeah, in part because of increases in minimum wage, which the administration doesn't like.
That's right. You have not seen a federal minimum wage increase because the Republicans have opposed it. But what you have seen in dozens and dozens of states and municipalities across the country is increases in the minimum wage pushed for by labor unions and other kinds of movement actors. And this is a lot of what's actually driving wages up at the bottom. Where you really see growth is in healthcare and other industries, but a lot of those jobs are very precarious, and a lot of healthcare jobs are actually very low wage.
Felicia Wong at the Roosevelt Institute. The World Trade Organization, I should say the World Health Organization, is sharply playing down unconfirmed news reports about progress on separate drug treatments for coronavirus in China and Britain. The WHO said today there are no known drug treatments.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Now, the department store chain Macy's just announced plans to shut down about 125 stores throughout the country. The closures will happen at the weakest performing locations over 3 years. Marketplace's Justin Ho is with me here with details.
Yeah, the company says it looked down the list of stores and factored in consumer trends and demographics, and as a result, about 125 of its stores need to close. We don't know exactly which stores will close, but the closures will happen at what the company calls lower-tier malls. Macy says this is part of a big structural change it's going through to lower costs to set the foundation for growth, even if it's shrinking at the present.
I see the company is also streamlining its corporate structure.
Yeah, the company says it's going to move its digital headquarters from San Francisco to New York. It'll also close its headquarters in Cincinnati. Meanwhile, the company says it's going to shed about 2,000 corporate and support jobs.
Macy's also wants to open more stores outside of malls. What's going on there?
Yeah, a new store format. They're branding it Market by Macy's. The stores will be a lot smaller, and Macy's wants to open them not in malls, but in suburban shopping centers. Macy's is not the first to go this way. Just yesterday, the beauty chain Sephora announced it's also going to focus on opening up stores outside of malls.
Justin, thank you. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.